Mississippi is known for its secluded wilderness and the majestic Mississippi River. However, it's no secret that this southern sanctuary has its share of violent history. Today I'm joined by Darkness Prevails to bring you four true horror stories from the state of Mississippi.
What terrors hide within its never-ending forests? How many bodies lie below the Mississippi River? If you're not careful, you could become one of them. Remember, when you're miles away, no one can hear you scream.
If you have any scary experiences from your home state, be sure to send your stories to the email in the description. Without any further ado, let's begin.
Number 1.
About 2 years ago, my best friend and I went on a road trip to New Orleans. On our way back home to Illinois, we stopped in Magnolia, Mississippi to get some gas. Next to the gas station was a historical marker for a Confederate cemetery. Both of us were born and raised north of the Mason-Dixon line. And since we had an interest in history, we decided, what the hell, let's go check this cemetery out. We parked the car at the front gate. We wandered around, reading the different tombstones and taking pictures. We stayed for about half an hour, and the sun was beginning to set when my friend suggested we start to head out. As we made our way back to the gate, we noticed another car had parked itself directly behind ours, so close in fact that the license plates were practically touching. I really didn't think much of it, other than the fact that it was kind of invasive, but I figured they were tourists like us, and they just wanted to check out the cemetery. It looked like there were three guys in the car, maybe mid-30s, and they were all looking in our direction. I commented to my friend that it was slightly strange that they were all just sitting there in the car, watching us. But we continued walking towards our car without slowing our pace. That's when another car pulled up nose to nose with ours, blocking us in. The second car was an SUV. I think it was a Chevy Trailblazer or something like that, and I noticed that it had Mississippi plates. This SUV also had three, possibly four guys in it, all looking towards us. My friend stops in his tracks and I follow suit, suddenly feeling very vulnerable and uncomfortable. We were two slightly out of shape college students being stared down by several very hostile looking adult men. I was just about to ask my friend what he wanted to do when the driver of the SUV stepped out and slammed his door hard. He began to walk towards us, when from the passenger seat of the first car, the guy fired a shot from a revolver into the air. My friend and I turned around and sprinted towards the far end of the cemetery. I glanced behind me to see all the men had leapt from their vehicles and had started chasing us. My friend and I jumped over the fence, and we ran off into the trees, zigzagging as we made our way back to the gas station, in case they fired off another shot. By some miracle, we made it back to the gas station unharmed and completely out of breath. We used our cell phones to call the cops. The clerk let us stay in the back office while we waited for nearly 40 minutes for the cops to arrive. But fortunately, the strange men never came in looking for us. When we gave our statements to the police, they seemed unconcerned and drove us back up the road to our car at the cemetery. The two cars were gone. But they did leave a parting gift. On the hood of our vehicle, there was a dead rat with an ice pick impaled through its chest. We thanked the cops and just drove non-stop through the night. To this day, I have no idea what it was all about. My friend's best guess is that it was a group of drunken hicks who didn't take too kindly to our northern plates. So they decided to scare us out of their cemetery. But prank or not, I'm glad they never caught us. They had at least one gun after all, and had we decided to fight back instead of run, something tells me they wouldn't have let us off with a warning. I remember that impaled rat and its bulging eyes, and I lay awake at night sometimes, wondering what they may have done to us.
Number 2.
This story is told from the perspective of a female. At the time of this incident, I was 18, and a very not intimidating 5'2", slightly stocky but maybe 130 pounds at the most. I was staying at a friend's house, which is off a back road way out in the country of Mississippi. Her street was full of other family members, and once you got to the main road, it was an unlit, treacherous, curvy road that went through the woods and was covered on both sides by ditches. It would be suicide if you chose to drive drunk, especially at night. Now on to one of the creepiest moments of my life. I left her house around 1:30 in the morning, slightly buzzed, but was still coordinated enough to drive home. I turned my music up, lit up my high beams, and made the turn onto the main road. Less than 2 minutes away from my friend's house, out of nowhere, a lady suddenly appears in my headlights. I slammed on the brakes and pulled across the road into the oncoming lane and stopped. On the alert for a possible trap, I rolled down the passenger side window and asked if she was all right. She was probably in her late 20s, very disheveled and moving like she was walking across thin ice. After a moment, she replied in a raspy, slightly unhinged voice,
"I'm very angry with my husband. I stepped out in front of your car to kill myself."
No hesitation. Just admitted that to me like she was offering coffee. "Are you fucking serious?" I shouted at her. She asked me for a light, even though she didn't seem to have any cigarettes, and shambled quickly over to my car. I rolled up my window as soon as she made to reach inside. I could already smell the liquor on her. She very nearly got her fingers caught in my window as soon as I started to roll forward. Then she started screaming at me and rambling on about how she hated her husband and wanted to die. I carefully drifted forward, watching her following me in my rearview mirror as I pulled my phone from my purse and attempted to dial 911. She started banging on my trunk with both hands, and I took my feet off the brake and gave it a little more gas just to put some distance between me and her. As the operator came online, by the light of my headlights, I noticed up the road that a red truck had crashed into a ditch. It had to have been recently as the hood of the truck was smoking. The operator raised her voice and I realized she was repeating herself. I apologized to the woman and told her the name of the road I was on and the situation with the truck and the drunk suicidal woman still following me. Suddenly from the driver's side window, there came a loud thump, and the light of a cell phone started blinding me. I turned left to see a grizzled man right in my face, shining his phone's flashlight directly in my eyes and screaming for me to stop and open the fucking door. His face was covered in blood. I screamed so loudly that every 911 operator in the building probably heard me. I dropped my phone and floored it, leaving both the man and the woman behind, a bloody handprint staining my driver's side window. After a minute of driving close to 80 miles an hour, I slowed down and told the operator what happened. I hung up when she asked me my name, mostly because I was freaked out. I drove straight home and never called back. To this day, I don't know what their situation was or what became of them. I just know that I'm never driving down an isolated road at night in Mississippi again.
Number 3.
When I was about 7 years old, my father bought a few hundred acres in southern Mississippi, about 90 minutes west of Mobile, Alabama. He built a small cabin on top of a hill that was in the middle of a large field surrounded by woods. This cabin was about 5 miles away from the nearest paved road. About a quarter mile north of this house was a small lake, more like a pond, really. One morning, during the fall, my parents and my younger sister had gone to get ice cream and do some shopping. I was 10 years old at the time and decided to use the 2 or 3 hours they'd be gone to go fishing at the lake with my Airedale Terrier named Bailey. About 5 minutes after I threw out my line, I began to get the feeling I was being watched by something or someone dangerous. Bailey must have felt it too, because a few seconds later, he began to growl. He was staring across the lake to the west. In the distance, I thought I could make out a silhouette of a large man behind a tree. but it was too far away to make out any details. I'm not sure if you've ever been completely alone in a large, wide-open space like that, only to suddenly get the sense you're being watched from a distance, but it's incredibly unnerving. Imagine walking across the field of a completely empty NFL stadium, except for one lone figure you can barely make out, watching you creepily from the stands. If that doesn't chill you, I don't know what would. After a moment, the silhouette vanished behind the tree, but Bailey continued to growl. Over the next 20 minutes, I caught glances of the figure moving from tree to tree, cautiously peeking its head slowly around the trunks, occasionally to look towards me. I was overwhelmed by shock, confusion, and fear. I didn't know what to do. I wasn't going to confront the figure, but I was definitely nervous about going home, because I knew no one was home at the time, and I did not want that figure to follow me there. So I just sat there, scared stiff, trying to fool myself into thinking, if I just continued to sit there and mind my own business, trying my best to look like I was paying more attention to the fishing than him, then that strange figure would leave me alone. But it only continued to make its way around the lake towards me. Bailey growled the whole time. I remember thinking how the stranger could easily have just walked around the lake by now and grabbed me, or God knows what, but they seemed to enjoy playing this game of slowly making their way towards me, peeking at me, daring me to react. They had to know I suspected something. I mean, my dog never stopped growling for over 20 minutes. After another 5 minutes, the figure was only a few dozen yards away, and I couldn't take it anymore. I withdrew my fishing line, and I started back towards my house. As an adult, I was in the army for 11 years as an MP, but forcing myself not to look over my shoulder as I walked away was the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life. In my mind's eye, whatever that was sprinting silently across the grass towards me, its eyes wide, its mouth open in a grotesque smile. When I hit that tree line, I broke into a run, and as I was running, Bailey dashed ahead of me and stopped some 20 yards ahead. Then he faced back towards the lake until I passed him. He continued this action the entire run home. My dog would watch my back, then sprint ahead, then repeat, and I couldn't help but think that that was just epic. Although I can grasp the awesomeness of this now, at the time I was so scared that I was literally sick. Even at such a young age, I knew that this man, if it even was a man, had ill intentions towards me. When I finally reached the cabin, I immediately locked the door and got my dad's .38 revolver. I sat in the large front window, my eyes glued to the trail opening and the woods between them. My family returned shortly after, and for some reason, I never mentioned any of this to them. I never felt safe at that cabin again either. When my friends or my sister wanted to go anywhere other than the area around the cabin, I made sure my parents were with us. My dad eventually sold the land a few years later. I'm an adult now, and to this day I have no idea who or what the hell was watching me from the woods that day. It still gives me sleepless nights. I sometimes wish I could go back to that moment as a grown man with military training and relive the experience and get some answers. Bailey lived a full life, and when it was time, he was put to sleep peacefully, very old and very much loved. Bailey may have saved my life that day. He was the best dog I have ever known.
Number 4.
I grew up in southern Mississippi, and like most Mississippi kids, my parents were super young when they had me. My mom was a major alcoholic for most of her life, and it was pretty bad back then. My dad worked all the time, which meant my younger sister and I got to spend all of our time with her. Sometimes when she needed a break from us or just wanted to go on another bender, she would leave us with my great aunt, who is 98 years old at the time and very senile. Her property also borders the state mental hospital. My grandmother used to tell us stories about being at my great aunt's house when random people would wander up to the house, asking to use the phone. Sometimes they would still be wearing hospital gowns. I was 8 years old when this specific incident happened. My mom dropped us off sometime in the afternoon on Friday. My sister, who was 5, went straight to the living room to play with toy horses next to my great aunt, who was wrapped up in knitting a blanket on her recliner while watching TV. A timer in the kitchen went off, and she asked me to take some biscuits out of the oven. As I walked past a window that overlooked a large old willow tree in the front yard, I thought I saw the figure of a man under the branches. I couldn't tell if it was a trick of the shadows, so I called over for my great aunt to come check it out. When she got to the window, she pushed her glasses up to the bridge of her nose. I pointed to the tree and said, "I think I see someone out there." She squinted her eyes and studied the tree for a moment, before throwing up her hands, laughing. I was so confused. She looked down at her old leather watch and whispered to herself,
"Oh, silly me, it's that time."
She began to shuffle out of the room, saying,
"The bicycle man is hungry."
I followed her into the back room. She then turned on a lamp that was next to an old torn black leather couch, where a pillow and blanket were laid out. Not only that, there were 2 half-empty glasses of water on the table. She picked the pillow up and fluffed it, then began straightening the blanket. As she did this, she began to tell me how,
"The bicycle man visits me every night. We have some dinner and coffee. Then I put him to bed. He then rides off in the mornings."
At this point, 8-year-old me was completely creeped out, and I began to feel my body tremble. I moved quietly back into the living room, crawling on my hands and knees, trying not to be seen from outside the window. I locked myself in a spare bedroom with my sister and pulled the house phone in with me. I desperately tried calling my mom, but unsurprisingly, she didn't pick up. I didn't know my dad's work number, and this was before he had a cell phone. We heard the man enter the house. He had a very deep voice and was coughing a lot. I don't remember exactly what he and my great aunt were talking about, but he used a lot of profanities and barked with laughter after she asked him a question. I distinctly remember him using the words, "bloodstains," but he kinda said it slowly, almost like he was singing it. My sister and I didn't come out for supper. We stayed there until it got dark out, and I made my sister share the bed with me as I lay awake, as still as I could, slowing my breathing so that I could hear whatever noise he might be making in any corner of the house. I don't know exactly what time it was, but I remember my heart skipping a beat when I heard heavy footsteps walking down the hall. They made their way to just outside our door, then the doorknob started turning. I knew my aunt had a key to the room, and I remember praying that the strange man didn't know where to find it. After a moment of wrestling with a locked door, the man let out a mournful, almost disappointed cry, like the sound a kid would make after he dropped his ice cream cone. The footsteps walked back down the hall, and I stared at the door in terror, my heart pounding in my ears. I don't remember falling asleep. I just remember the sound of my mom moving around in the kitchen the next morning. As soon as I realized what time it was, I hauled ass into the kitchen and explained what happened. My mom looked really concerned, so she asked my great aunt about it, to which she gave her the same story that she had given me the night before. I told my mom about the makeshift bed in the back room too. We went to take a look at the couch. Another half-empty glass of water was on the nightstand, and the bedspread was messy, as if someone had slept there and left in a hurry. My mother flipped her shit, then called her friend at the sheriff's office about the stranger on the bicycle. A few days later, my mom got a call from her friend. They had picked up a guy on a bicycle who was trying to break into a house nearby. They found a knife, some rope, and several bags of biscuits on him. Apparently, he had been responsible for several break-ins in the area while he had been staying with my aunt. I tried to find some newspaper articles or anything online about the bicycle man, but I had no luck. My great aunt died a couple of years later. As for the bicycle man, I don't remember his name or what became of him. I barely remember what he looked like, but he gave me the worst night of my life.
There's always a reason to be afraid.